Welcome to Flipping the Script. I'm Lindsay Cuiava, your host and the artistic director of Re Theater, an online theater and education consulting company. Each week, we bring you new episodes about the theater world and theater education in an effort to revolutionize the way that theater is seen at the school and community level and inspire you to make art that matters wherever you may be. Hey, everybody. I am so glad to be back, and I hope you all had a wonderful summer. My summer was total chaos. I was on the road a lot. I was going to a bunch of different conferences. I ran a performance intensive. Just a lot of different things going on, and I am just so thankful for fall. I don't know about you guys. Fall is like my jam. It's my favorite time of the year because it seems like everything is just kind of falling back into place, and it's the lead up to the holiday season, and I love fall clothes and the weather. I don't like pumpkin spice latte things, but beyond that, I'm about as into fall as you can possibly get. So I'm excited that the podcast is coming back, and I hope that the school year is starting out really great for everybody. I have been doing so many different things for both the podcast and Re Theater, and they will all be coming up on the podcast different points. But the exciting thing that is currently happening in my life is I am in the middle right now of making a move out to New York City. I'm going to be in New York starting September 16th. I'm really excited and looking forward to it. It's not a permanent move. It's just a temporary thing. I have some different gigs out that way, and I'm going to be working a lot on the podcast with some really exciting guests for you guys this fall. So I'm going to be out in New York City seeing a ton of shows. I'm going to be talking about those in the podcast. If you are in New York, I would absolutely love it if you have any tips or anything about things I should make sure I see or do, or general things of moving to New York. Please shoot me an email. I would love to hear from you and all of that fun stuff. So yeah, I'm in the middle of moving, but we wanted to make sure that we got the podcast out to you. So we are coming back. It's going to be out every Friday once again for the next few months. So our first episode that we're coming back with in July, I had the opportunity to run a performance intensive camp for the theater that I actually grew up at in Wausau, Wisconsin, which is in rural Wisconsin. And they hired Re Theater to come and do a 2-week trial of having an education focus at this theater. And so I was a part of one of the weeks and wrote the curriculum for the other. And while I was there, I brought a good friend of mine who's been a guest on the podcast a few times, Kate Yeager. So Kate and I sat down with the artistic director and executive director of this theater, Central Wisconsin Children's Theater, Justin Evans. And we talked about auditions, and what we wanted to do is do a podcast episode about things that we wish our students knew from the audition and casting side of things. Because I mean, a lot of times, I mean, right now we're in the middle of that whole casting and auditioning process and season for a lot of us. And it's so tough because if you are a director or a teacher, you just feel like the worst person out there because you know that you are crushing many, many young people's dreams because there's only so many roles and so many lead roles and so many people that can possibly be in the show. And so what we want to do is talk about auditions and casting from this side of the table, things that we always are looking for, things that we're excited about, a little bit into the idea of casting, just give some insight to students. So students, if this is really a podcast for you, and hopefully for teachers, if you listen as well, it's hopefully an affirmation of, okay, I'm okay. And there's other people that feel the same way as I do. So so that's coming up. Then next week, we're going to have the flip of it. So I have some students who are coming on to talk about what they wish their directors and teachers knew about auditions and the casting process. So hopefully this will kind of give us like some good insight and start some good conversations the rest of the month. And we are kicking into some ridiculously exciting guests that I cannot wait to bring you guys. So let's go ahead. I will stop babbling now. I'm just excited to be back and bringing you guys some episodes. If you guys have any ideas for things that you'd like to see or guests or topics you'd like us talking about, you know, always go ahead and send me an email at lindsay@retheater.com. theaterco.com. Always excited to hear that. But for now, enjoy this week's episode. Will be a super fun episode. And we've all just gotten done doing drama camp all day. So we're like, you know, totally awake and not tired and, you know, all of those things. But that'll be great to talk about today. So today I am joined by Kate Yeager, who is one of my dear friends and has been on the podcast quite a few times, chatting about all the fun things. And the same is different. We're not talking about like how to produce work. We're going to talk about what it's like from our side. So thanks, Kate.
My pleasure. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. And Kate is actually in Wisconsin with me. So she's came across halfway across the country with me to this land of green trees and open spaces and cheese.
So. Yes. I've already eaten cheese curds, so all is right.
Exactly as it should be, you know? Except for Justin does not agree with this. So Justin's also with me. He's the executive director of Central Wisconsin Children's Theater, which is where I grew up doing theater and also where we are doing this drama camp this week. So hey, Justin.
Hello.
And you don't think that the cheese curds K-8 count as cheese curds?
No, I don't.
I mean, please explain to us why, so everybody in the world understands why we take cheese curds seriously here.
Well, we take cheese curds so seriously here because, well, we're the land of cheese. We have to. And you got them at a fast food restaurant.
I couldn't wait.
Mass-produced cheese curds.
But the best fast food restaurant in the entire universe.
That's true. I'll give you that part.
The hamburger was amazing that I had.
Oh, yeah. Like, so good, right?
Yeah, so good. And what you have encouraged me, Justin, is that I have more cheese curds to look forward to.
That's true.
And that I started with the correct ones because, you know, I'll just go up from there.
Exactly. Expectations can go nowhere but up as opposed to starting so great and then ending
and
on
then
Culver's.
Ending, right?
Yeah, right, right.
So I promise you will leave here 6 pounds heavier than
Has already happened. I've eaten some custard already. I've had
pizza fries.
Oh, we had pizza fries. I didn't know that was a thing that I needed in my life, but I do.
Yeah. I think that pizza fries are a central Wisconsin thing.
I think they were invented here, actually.
Oh, really?
Actually, I believe in Wausau.
Oh, wow. Really?
At Papillon's.
Oh my God. If that's a true statement, then Papillon's is like my favorite, and then we have to
go there.
Okay.
I believe they were invented
there. Because, so I was with Anna Young, who is the operations director for Re Theater. Yeah, that's the name of my company. I almost said introspect. Lindsay. And we were in Nebraska.
Back in
Yeah, exactly. We were at the grocery store in Nebraska, and I was like, OMG, I'm in the Midwest. I really, really need pizza fries. She's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, I don't, what? I'm so confused. How do you not know what this is? And then they didn't have them at the grocery store in Nebraska, so I think it is. And she's from Green Bay, or Appleton.
So and she didn't know what they were?
No.
Maybe it is. I'm so happy that I got to experience them here in their birth.
I'm pretty sure you can get them anywhere in Wisconsin.
I don't know. She didn't ever have them. Maybe because she was a vegan for a little bit.
You know,
and I hope you're listening to this, and now we're talking about you.
Yeah, cheese and vegans go together not at all.
That's true. Oh, yes, that is very true. Yeah. I should know this as I might live in a vegan house.
It's true.
But yeah, that's true.
No pizza fries for you.
No pizza fries. I have to eat them all now. Or I can have like cashew cheese or something. Who knows? But yeah, we are not actually going to talk about Wisconsin, even though it would be a great episode because Wisconsin is the best. But in fact, we are going to be talking today. We're going to do a series of two episodes geared towards what we wish somebody knew about our point of view. So today we're going to be talking about what, as directors and as educators, we wish young people knew from our point of view from the other side of the table. And this is great because I wanted to do this right before school started because we are going to have thousands and thousands of kids across the country going into auditions here in the next few months. And we'll have, you know, thousands of teachers also hosting auditions in the next few months. So I wanted to do one from the point of view as directors and educators and one from the point of view as students, because I think on both of our sides, sometimes we don't like to hear what the other people have to say, but they are very valid. So today we're going to be kind of talking about it from that point of view. Before we do that, I would just love to just like want to just like talk a little bit like who you are and like the work that you kind of do so that the audience knows that. Yeah. I think everybody kind of knows what I do, but so I'm a dramaturg and an educator with Ree Theater. I do a lot of work with schools and with community theaters, building programming that's based in dramaturgy and community engagement. But I also do work in schools directly with students, and I've been a school teacher myself. So I'm going to be kind of talking about things from a school teacher point of view, an educator in a traditional classroom, and also from a new work standpoint, which is going to be more rare for young people. But I do a lot of that kind of work as well, and I've written some shows. So that's kind of where I'm going to be coming from. And yeah.
Yes. I make my living as a teaching artist and as a professional equity actor.
Yes.
So yes. So when I am not on stage, I am directing or I am teaching. I'm also a private coach who works on audition prep and how you actually get from the page to the stage. So I'll be coming from the perspective of sort of the professional level or the mid-sized theater level and how that whole process works. And also I'll might throw in some education thoughts as well here and there.
Yeah, give us your thoughts. It's amazing. Great, awesome, cool.
Wow. Justin is laughing at us. As well.
I'm laughing at the voice that Lindsay just did. I've been the executive director of Central Wisconsin Children's Theater for a little over a year now.
Great.
But I've been involved with the organization since 1994. I started as an actor.
Yeah.
And then graduated to director, board member, president of the board. Vocal director, set designer. So I've done every aspect of theater in this organization, I think.
Yeah.
Except maybe sound and light design.
Oh, well, you can add those to your list now of things you have to do.
Yeah, right. It's on my bucket list.
Yeah.
Sound and light design.
Yeah, there you go. In all your spare time.
Right.
Which I imagine you have.
There's not much.
Yeah.
This is the most time that I have right now.
Right now, yeah, that we're chatting.
Yeah, thank you. As long as this takes, that's all the spare time I have.
All right, so I guess it's a no to those things. All right.
So I'll be kind of coming at it from the community theater aspect, putting on a show without a budget. Sort of thing.
Yeah, I guess that's a thing we all have people deal with.
Oh, yeah. It's a major thing that we have to deal with.
Yeah.
And, you know, constantly begging for money, plus trying to put on a great show at the same time.
Yeah. Awesome. This is going to be super fun. I'm really excited. Okay, so I think let's start with talking about auditions and casting. So actually start with auditions, and then we can kind of move through, because I think one of the things that I think we all hear about all the time is kids just, I mean, first of all, the nerves, right, that they come into with auditions. But like, what are some things that you wish kids understood about the audition process, whether it's like the process itself or the material they select from your point of view as a director?
The first thing I'll say is that the people behind the table are on your side. It doesn't always feel like that, right? You walk into this big, scary room and there's these people that are separated from you by a table, and they may be strangers to you, or even worse, sometimes even scarier, they may be people you know. There's something about auditioning for people that you know in your life that sometimes can be a little bit scarier, but we want you to succeed. Our job is easier and happier and just made more righteous by you succeeding. And we're not there judging you and hoping that you fail, right? Mm-hmm. So know that the people on the other side of the table are on your side. And if they are not, then you should consider working somewhere else.
That's really true. I think that's like a big thing. Like I always tell, like, when my students are doing like audition prep, and they're oftentimes auditioning for you, that you have to remember that those people are your biggest cheerleaders. Like, I don't think any of us have ever been like, I can't wait to go to auditions and see a bunch of terrible people and rip kids to shred. I hope nobody with talent comes in. Like, every time we're hoping that it's like the person that's going to play the role that we're hoping for.
Yeah. Right. I think, you know, to Kate's point, our dream scenario is that we've got 10 people for each role. That would be great.
Yeah.
Right.
And so, and that rarely happens.
Right. I don't know that it has ever happened, at least in our world.
Right. But it's not like we're hoping that we can add to our audition burn book where we write down, you know, like, oh, saw this audition today, right? We are there for you. We are there to support you. And again, it makes our life happier and easier when you feel at ease and when you feel supported. So know that we're on your side.
Yeah.
Wait, do you actually have one of those? An audition burn book?
Well, now I want one.
Yeah. I think you need one.
I like that.
I know. I think I might make one for my own auditions that I do as an actor. And I will tell you that as I'm telling you this, I absolutely have to remind myself of that very same thing when I go into audition. I have to remember, oh, right.
Mm-hmm.
I've been on the other side of the table. I want people to succeed. So I have to remind myself of that before I head into the audition room, because it can feel very us versus them.
Yeah.
Because there is a power dynamic, and that's absolutely true.
Well, but I think we have to acknowledge that too, as the auditors or the audition, like on the other side of the table, because sometimes it can get really easy. I mean, I know I have to like really work on making sure that I don't have RBF when people are auditioning, and I try really hard to just look and be like, oh, I'm so excited. And like, not like just go immediately into like my number system or whatever my code is, to be like really supportive. Cause and it is terrifying. That's why I stopped performing. Cause I couldn't deal with auditions.
But you should know that when we are not looking at you, it is because we are writing notes about you. And that's...
And not bad notes, not for the burn book.
Right, not for the burn book. But it's important for us to chronicle in real time what is happening, because we see so many people through the course of auditions that even when it's somebody that we've worked with before, I still need reminders of what happened in this particular callback, not what happened in the show we did together a year ago. So I have to be contemporaneous notes, I think they call it. Ooh, that just sounded so official. Yeah.
Look at you.
Thank you.
I don't even know what that means.
I know, I don't either, but I think it belongs to the burn book.
I think so. I think that like makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm into this. Yeah.
Write it in the moment.
I was just kidding. I follow you. And I think the other thing to remember is that everybody hates auditioning. Nobody likes it. I've never met a single person that's like, ooh, I can't wait to go to auditions today.
Mm-hmm. Can't wait to be judged by people. It's amazing.
Right. And, you know, to your point, even if it's somebody that we've worked with before, we kind of have to judge based on what they're giving us at the moment.
Right.
Although it does help if you have worked with somebody before, if they are uber nervous, to know that they're better than what they're showing.
Yeah. How do you guys deal with that? Because I'm curious, like when people show up and are more nervous in the room, how do you, like, do you cut people slack? Because then it's tough, right? Because like if you have a kid that comes in and you don't know them and they're really nervous versus a kid that you have worked before and you know that they can pull it together, but they're still nervous. Like, how do you like reconcile that?
Yeah. I try to look for, like, especially when they're singing, I try to look for the bright notes. Mm-hmm. So like the notes that they hit that sound good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then say, okay, is that a voice that we can work with?
Yeah.
Because it happens where, you know, the last time we held auditions here, we had a couple of kids who broke down crying in the middle of them.
Mm-hmm.
But just before they did that, hit a really nice note. And I made a note of it.
Yep.
Because that's what I look for. That and when they're doing a reading too. Look for the bright spots. So if they are nervous, because there's always going to be that moment where they chill out and relax for a minute, and they're giving you something more.
Yeah.
Very true.
And I think it's important to know that we can tell when nerves are there. Like, we can tell the difference between somebody who maybe can't hit a note versus somebody whose breath support is compromised because of their nerves.
Yeah.
So oftentimes, I think people will leave beating themselves up for having a wavering note or for a catch breath moment. We are also aware of those things, and there is grace around that, and there's room for that, because we know it's terrifying and we know that it's a difficult thing. And I've had auditions where I've left thinking, oh my gosh, I totally screwed that up. There's no way they're ever going to cast me, and have gotten into the show. There's also been shows that I've had auditions for and thought, I'm a shoo-in, and have not gotten into the show. So
it's a mixed bag. Yeah. I think especially when I'm working with students that I have in class, mm-hmm. it's a little tough because I try so hard to like be equal.
Yeah.
But I guess like just like total transparency, like if I know a student is capable of something and I don't see it in the audition room, sometimes I I feel bad, but I do go with that. And it's not negative. I think if anything, if there's young people listening that are like, oh, I knew my teacher did that. So annoying. I think it should be more encouragement that if you're taking this seriously, like if you want to lead, you need to be putting in the work and the time to work on your craft. Yeah. And there is payoff for that. Like if you are going to memorize your monologue the night before you go in, and you're going to rush through it. I mean, and there's a kid that's going to work on it for like a week or 2 weeks and be really, really solid, or maybe have a private coach. Like, honestly, like it makes sense that that kid is going to have a leg up on you. And so like, if you're like, why am I not getting the leads? Why am I not getting solos? Whatever. And you're not even in a choir class at your school, or you're not taking the drama class if it's offered, or you're not taking like, if there's a dance class offered at your school, if you're not putting in the time to train, I think you need to also be realistic with yourself and realize, yeah, like sometimes, you know, especially in this industry, luck and who you know and the and how that works really does come into play. Now, nobody's like, oh my gosh, I love when kids are like, oh, but like they totally bribed the director to give them that role. That just does not happen, guys.
I mean, I wish.
Yeah. Are you kidding me? Somebody was like, you cast my kid for $100. I would never do it. But I'm like, $100? Sounds great.
I'm not going to lie. I think about it.
Right.
I wouldn't do it.
Right.
But I think about it for a minute.
Right. Like, I think that you have to, I also encourage like young people listening to realize that like you're most of you. I mean, there's some exceptions, right? But like everybody, this is a skill that is, it's not a skill that you just like acquire. It's a craft that you constantly have to be working on. So get yourself into those other extracurriculars or those classes during the school day so you can work on your craft.
Or if you can't, make sure that you're doing the work yourself.
Right.
Because just as we can tell when somebody is nervous, mm-hmm. we can tell when someone has not prepared.
Yes.
And you cannot rely upon your previous relationship with the director to carry you through, because I think what you were saying is maybe like sometimes you hold kids that you've worked with to a little bit of a higher expectation.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I think that sometimes that is true. When I know what someone is capable of, and I know that it looks like they just, it looks like they've never looked at the side before. Uh-huh. It's the first time they're saying it out loud, or they haven't, you know, really, they've brought in their music and it's a mess. We can tell when mm-hmm. you've sort of half done the work.
Right. Have you guys ever had somebody like come in and like they've done a bunch of shows with you and they're just like acting like your friend and like they just don't have to try?
Every audition.
Yarp.
Yeah. Like, how do you deal with that?
Well, because we audition in small groups. Mm-hmm. So we have like 10 at a time come in.
Okay.
And so you can tell immediately when they're trying to like show off. When they're like, hey, Justin, how's it going? How are you?
Oh, my gosh. I hate that. It makes me want to
vomit. Hey, remember when we did Newsies? Like,
no.
Like, they're bringing it up.
We did Newsies together? I totally forgot. Right.
Yeah. So I just always kind of chuckle, and I just try to brush it off and move aside. And then I'll actually have more of a conversation with the other kids that walked in that door so they don't feel that they're on, you know, unequal playing field.
Yeah. Depending, I've called people out before where I'll ask them, you know, hey, I need you to try that again for me. What I'm looking for is some focus from you. Or I know that you're capable of a different kind of work, and then try to specify the work that, and then if they can't bring it that second time, that is what it is. And that's the information that I have to go with. Because again, I have to go with the information that I got for this audition, mm-hmm. not the information that I had from a year ago when I worked on a show with you.
Right. Well, especially because as young people, you're growing mm-hmm. so much. I mean, even like as adults, like doing this as a profession, like you're constantly learning and expanding what you can do. But I think young people, your voices are changing so much. Mm-hmm. Like your skill set, you're just growing as an artist in such a rapid way that we need you to come in and give it your all. And like I don't see it as much as a teacher, because like they kind of know that that's not okay, because they're used to that dynamic of what it's like in the classroom versus in the rehearsal room. But I think that I just always find it so uncomfortable, and it's not going to score you any points mm-hmm. to go into the rehearsal room and be like, oh, hey, best friend. It doesn't make you look cool either. Like that's like, so I remember doing that style of audition here at Children's Theater and always being so uncomfortable mm-hmm. when people did that, because especially when I was new and I hadn't been cast in shows yet, it was like, oh, well, like, am I just like not okay? Like, can I not be cast here? So don't make people feel bad. It's not going to help you.
Right. Right.
And with that, one thing that I would love for you to know, truly, is that your audition, we say it all the time, but it starts the moment you hit that building.
Oh.
And how you treat the people around you is noticed. And if you are coming in and checking in with the person and you give them attitude and you're rude to them, that information is going to come across. If you are being rude to other actors who are auditioning, that's noted. If you are constantly talking while the director is trying to give broad notes for everybody to think of, we notice those things. So you can't rely on it just being that, you know, 30 seconds, minute and a half that you have in front of the director. I once had a situation, this was with adult actors, and I was so keen on this one person and I was ready to cast them. And the person who was running my front desk to do check-in told me how rude this person had been incredibly dismissive and just really short with them and sharp. And I did not cast that person. Because if you are going to treat somebody that you think doesn't have, you know, can't help you a certain way, I'm not down for that, because I need to make sure that my ensemble is cohesive and that I'm bringing people in who want to work together and who want to put their best foot forward.
Right. And, you know, to your point, also having a relationship with the director is not always a great thing, because we know what you were like in the last show.
Yep. Right.
And if you showed up to rehearsals unprepared, if you weren't giving your all at rehearsals, if you were acting like a prima donna, that's going to hurt you in the long run.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the opposite of that is also true. We see those kind moments. We see those moments of concentration. We see those moments where you're working well with people in an ensemble. And that is, I would so much rather cast somebody who I know is going to fit into the working group and than somebody who is incredibly talented, but a jerk.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, we're always watching, and that is way more important to me than skill level.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to work with anybody who is going to be hard to work with or put anybody else down.
Right.
I also, I don't know if you guys noticed this. This is maybe a little specific, but it's fine. I feel like there is something about sophomore year girls and junior year boys that make it incredibly difficult to work with. And it's just like, it's not to be like, if you are that age, you are the worst. It is to call out like, hey, like, I think that there's just something about like where you are maturity wise potentially. And maybe it's like, I'm just over it. And I'm so.
Well, and also, your bodies are going through changes. And there is a lot of chemical reaction happening inside your bodies. And, you know, puberty is real and it is difficult and it is hard. So if you know going in that you are prone to feeling heightened emotions during that time, you know, being aware of that, sometimes we like to say knowledge is power, but sort of knowing, you know, if and I, you know, as an older woman now who's in my 40s, am starting to have the chemical reactions in my body that are taking me the other direction. And I know that there are times where I am just crusty as a person and I'm just feeling salty about everything, and making the conscious choice to leave that at the door, or before I hit the door, leave that in the car, and come in with my best face and my best foot forward.
That's really good advice.
Yeah.
Like, just like be aware. And if you're having a bad day, like, I don't mind if the student comes up to me and is like, yeah, I failed my math test. And like, I feel like really crummy. I'm like, oh, cool. Like, if I can let you out of rehearsal, I usually will. Like, if you've had a bad day or your boyfriend broke up with you or whatever, if I can accommodate in some way, I would rather know as a director though, that you're having a bad day rather than you come in and be a terror.
Right.
Don't.
Or break out into tears when I give you a note.
Right. Yes. Like, don't use it as a like pity party thing. And obviously like, you don't want to like overuse that privilege. But I think, I don't know about you guys, but I would rather know if you're having a bad day or you need a little extra grace than for you just to like, just not tell me.
And that's something I've had to learn as an actor, is if there is something in my life that is affecting me, to take the director aside and let them know, hey, if I seem distracted, you know, it's because I'm dealing with this family issue. It is not because I don't want to be here. So my apologies in advance. And then it just helps us be on that same page.
Yeah.
And again, it's not for a pity party or for like, they didn't have the ice cream flavor that I wanted today and I'm feeling pretty bummed about it.
Right.
But we come into rehearsal, we come into auditions, we come into this world that we inhabit together, carrying everything that happens in the day with us. And it is hard to leave it at the door. And if there's something that's really, you know, on your mind and you know it's going to distract you, we'd much rather know so we can support you through that than just think, wow, that person has really turned into a diva.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Although, you know, it's funny because I have noticed that the age groups that you just talked about, junior boys and sophomore girls, and it never put two and two together, though, that was the age group.
Oh, yeah.
Like, until you just said something. So, yeah, I've noticed it. Great. I wish I knew what it was.
I don't know.
I think so much of it is hormones.
I'm sure it is, but also... Yeah. It's also so for like girls around that time, I'm assuming, and I know for boys around the junior year, they're kind of getting out of that awkward stage.
Yeah.
And so now their confidence is kind of getting back and they're taking that to another level where now all of a sudden a lot of these boys think they're God's gift.
But they're not?
No, they're really not.
Oh, weird.
They're really not. And I'm sure I was the same way when I was, you know, 17 years old, but.
Well, I'm sure. I mean, I remember myself. In those second semester, sophomore year through junior year, I was miserable. Thanks to every director who still worked with me.
That's funny.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping, you know, maybe. Yeah. How do we fix that?
I don't know. It's maybe just a.
Can we fix that?
It's so funny because I remember when I was doing Introspect, like those kids stayed around, a lot of them for forever. And like now they're my friends and I have this tradition where like when I'm a student of mine now is 21, I will take them out for a drink. And it's really fun and exciting as like a former teacher to do. But it's really funny because like they'll talk to me and like it's always like, oh, but you're such a lovely human. And they'll be like, remember that time? Or it'll come up in the conversation. And I'm like, yeah, you were really, really hard to work with. And there was like that year that I thought I was gonna have to strangle you in some way. But I think it's just everybody goes through it. And it's like when I think it maybe is like maybe by that time, because girls come into theater sometimes earlier than boys, or like they start to hit their stride in it. And so maybe it's like that year of like that initial confidence, like, well, I know what I'm doing and I don't need to listen to you as much. And boys come into it a little later, or I'm not sure what it is, but it's weird. I think just maybe be aware of it, of like, am I being a diva? Like, yeah, you still need to come to rehearsal, and you like, I don't care if you're the world's best singer and you're more talented than everyone else in the room, you still need to be at vocal rehearsal learning the vocals along with everybody else,
right?
That kind of stuff.
Yeah. A great example of that, and I'll call him out in the best possible way. I worked with a man who played Jean Valjean on Broadway and on the national tour. Amazing. And when we did Les Mis as that actor, he was at every music rehearsal. He could sing that show in his sleep, but he knew it was important for him to be there not only for the process, but also the process of getting the ensemble and to become a cohesive group.
Yeah.
And I just always admired that so much, that he was always there, never complained, never, you know, sort of was like, I can do this. Those aren't words, but, you know.
Yeah, right. No, that's a really good example. That's a good example, though.
Yeah.
Like, if you can do it, right? I think you can do it, too.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. You know, going back to auditions real quick, if I may. Because I want to get kind of your input on this, because I know how I feel about it. And I don't know how, Kate, you run your auditions, if it's when... Are they allowed to sing whatever they want to sing?
It depends on, usually yes, for that initial audition, they get their monologue and their song. And then for callbacks, I'll give them specific sides and songs to sing.
How do you feel about them singing songs from the show that they're auditioning for?
Oh, that is a big no-no.
Never.
I'm not the only one then.
Yeah.
No.
Okay, good.
Kids, never sing a song from a show that you're auditioning for. It's a terrible idea. Why would you do this? It's silly. and we should clarify why it's silly. So
what I always tried to do as an actor when I was auditioning for a show, I don't think I think maybe one time I auditioned with a song from the show, and it was only because I'd done the show before. Mm-hmm. And so I know, I knew that song. Mm-hmm. And knew it as well as I would if I was in the show again. But otherwise, I try to take a similar type musical. So like if it's Rent, let's say I'm mm-hmm. auditioning for Rent, I'm going to probably take something from like Rock of Ages right. or something like that and sing that and something that's going to show off my range. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I would never go in there and sing Seasons of Love.
And part of the reason you don't want to do that is it actually is unfair to you. Because it's you coming in and when you're doing an audition, we assume that that is as close to a final product as you have right now. Mm-hmm. So if you're coming in with a song from the show that you're in, I'm going to assume that that means that that is the end all be all of what you think that your performance should be for that show. Ooh. And if it is not what I have envisioned story wise, then whether I like it or not, I'm going to make a value judgment on that. And you might have just sold yourself right out of the show versus mm-hmm. if you'd brought in a similar song and I can picture what that would be and save that. What if you do have a callbacks with sides and songs, that's yeah. where you want to save, because then I know that that's not your best attempt at a final performance. It's that I gave it to you, you know, a week ago and you've had limited time to work on it.
Right.
Right.
It's also just a little presumptuous.
Oh, yes.
Honestly.
Right. That, and I don't want to hear the same song mm-mm. 75 times.
No. Yes. And sometimes I know some directors ask for that specifically, but unless it's specifically asked for, don't do that. How do you guys feel about when students bring, would you rather hear them sing an excellent song that is not of the same genre of the show, or would you rather hear them sing a song that is the genre of the show?
I mean,
it's not as excellent in their.
I'd rather hear the excellent one.
I'd rather hear what they feel secure and the strong.
Okay.
Because again, you're showing us something that in theory is so well prepared that it could go onto the stage.
Okay.
Because it does, right? You're right in front of us.
Yeah.
And I would rather hear somebody kick butt at something that they feel really confident in than somebody try at the last minute to add a song into their repertoire that they've never tried before, but it's in the right style, so therefore I'm going to try to do it really fast.
Yeah,
right. And here's a good key to know whether or not you should audition with that song. If you have to bring lyrics into the audition, don't sing that song.
Yeah. And I think it goes down to it's about preparation, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is again kind of circling back to what I was saying before. Like, this is a craft. It's something that you have a skill to develop. Like, it is, this is again why I think I've said this on a million podcasts. But I think it's really important that you understand the art form and the totality of what you're doing, and understanding musical theater history so that you can understand, like, oh, if I'm going to be doing a Golden Age musical, I probably shouldn't come in and sing Hairspray, right? And so that you have material prepared for the different styles and genres and eras of musical theater so that you're not scrambling at the last minute
right.
to make that happen.
Yeah, right. you should hopefully have an audition book that has at least 5 songs in it, right? Mm-hmm. One from, you know, you want your contemporary pop sound, you want your Golden Age song, you want a ballad, you want something that is a character song.
Right.
So you should have a variety. And oftentimes at an audition, I will ask for another song. I will hear something from someone and I'll say, what else do you have in your book? And if the answer is nothing, I don't count it against you, but it also doesn't help you.
Yeah.
Because I was giving you another opportunity to show me more. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have anything more to show me, then I can only rely on what I've just seen.
Right.
And the same is true with monologues too. You should have a wide variety of monologues, and none of them should be from the internet. Let me make that very clear. Partly because oftentimes those are written
as monologues only,
not very well, but also because everybody brings them in, and mm-hmm. you're going to end up doing the same monologue as everybody else. And there's only so many times that I can hear it. And I'm just going to be brutally honest. I don't ever want to hear the coat hanger monologue from You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown ever again. I love that monologue. I get it. It's clever and wonderful, but it has been done to death. But every director has that version, right? Someone else may be like, are you crazy, Kate? That is my favorite monologue, and it's the only one I want to hear. And there are good monologues on the internet. It's not, but they are hard to come by.
Right.
They're like the white whale of, you know, searching that out. But oftentimes they're written really generally, mm-hmm. and there's no stakes, no tactics, there's no room for any sort of character realizations or growth. They're just written as, my mom sure is mean. I hope I don't have to eat Brussels sprouts again today. What? Brussels sprouts? Oh, man. I mean, that is the typical.
I'm not going to lie. I'd cast you in my show.
Oh, thank you.
So, you know, I also, the other thing that while you're saying that, I don't want to hear A Million Dreams again.
Oh, from
The Greatest Showman.
Greatest Showman. Yep.
Is that a monologue?
No.
Is it a song?
It's a song.
It's a
Can we just like not sing movie musical songs when we go into auditions?
Well, So I was
talking, if you sing it well, it's fine.
But I was talking about risk reward.
Okay.
Right? So doing something from a movie that maybe everybody is doing, if you know and you really know that you can kill that song and that is the best foot forward that you can do, I'm going to be hesitant to say, like, don't. But you right. really need to know that you are strong on it. If you come in and you do a blah version of a song that everybody else is doing,
yeah.
it does right. you no favors.
Or like the Moana song.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever that one is. I forget
like, don't ever sing some signature song from any musical or any movie, I feel like, right? Like,
especially one that's been popular in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
Because trust that everybody else is also going to be singing that song.
Right.
And
right.
you know, I can't tell you how many times a 7-year-old girl has come into an audition and sang either Million Dreams or that Moana song.
Right. Yes.
Because it's, and we, our auditions, we do not provide a compliment. Mm-hmm. So they do it a cappella.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And you're going to come in and neither of those songs are easy
no.
to sing.
No, no.
And if you're doing it a cappella, it's
even
20
harder.
Times harder and yeah. you're not going to do it right.
Yeah.
So I'd rather hear Happy Birthday sung well.
Yeah.
Than one of those two songs again.
And I mean, you know, there's no right. There's no rule to it because that's hard. Like she used to be Mine from Waitress
yep.
is a song that I hear all the time. Mm-hmm. It happens to be one of my current favorite songs. But that also means if I hear it a million times, it needs to be amazing.
Right.
Because I've heard it 10 times by the time you get into the room. And you're lucky that I love that song because I hear it so, so much.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they run the risk of ruining it for you.
Yes, which people have come close to.
Yeah, no. That's, yeah, so I kind of want to, just because I'm like, oh my gosh, we've talked about this for so long, which is awesome. What do you guys think about as far as casting? Because I know a lot of kids are really always like, oh my gosh, like you guys are pre-casting or the director like told so-and-so that they already have the part. And I'm like, gosh, I find that like very difficult to believe.
Yeah.
I really only know like one director that I would say was actually like a toxic, awful human and who like would like actively try to make people's lives more difficult and hurt people in the process. Only one. And I've worked with like a bazillion million people.
Yeah.
Like, what do you guys have to say as far as like your point of view from casting that you wish kids understood or knew?
On the professional level, there is, I think, more pre-casting that happens. Never
sure.
happens to me. but there can be that.
Yeah.
But I think I have once done a show where it wasn't even my decision. It was the producing organization had already offered. And I was just really transparent about it during auditions.
Mm-hmm.
That role has already been cast. And I did not see anybody for that role. And if they were there just to be seen for understudy, I made sure that they knew that that role had been cast, but that
yeah.
I was looking for the cover. It's rare that it happens. I've never done it in educational theater once. I never have. I may have people in mind.
Mm-hmm.
I bet that person would be good. But I can't tell you the number of times I've thought, oh, I bet that person would be great. And someone else has come in out of left field and just completely made me rethink what I have done. And if your director is worth their salt, they're going to be looking for somebody to surprise them. They're mm-hmm. looking for somebody that is either showing them skills that they've never shown before, that their growth has just been so immense, or somebody who's new to the program who just comes in and kills it. And, you know, I really try to be open during auditions. I never try to precast it in my head. But again, I know that I have people that I can rely on
right.
that I'm excited to see,
mm-hmm.
but it's not a guarantee.
Yeah, that makes sense. What right. about you?
Well, I agree with everything that you just said. I don't precast shows, but in the same token, I don't pick shows that I know I can't cast.
Yeah.
Which True. Is a big thing. And have I encouraged people to audition for shows before? Sure. And if they have asked me, well, what kind of parts are there? I'll say, there's a lot of great parts. I could see you playing this part or this part or this part.
Mm-hmm.
But by no means do I ever say, hey, I want you to come in and audition because you're going to play this part.
Yeah.
Does it happen? I'm sure it does.
I've had it happen to me as an actor where I've had a director say, I really need you to come in. There's a part that's perfect for you. And then have not gotten that role. And that's yeah. really painful. And I try really hard to never, I really try hard to phrase it when I'm talking to somebody who I'm right. like, yeah, I would love to see you come in, making sure to never make it seem like a guarantee or a,
yeah.
or right. even a strong possibility. Right.
right.
And even if we're, you know, looking at it from like an ideal standpoint in our head, as far as casting goes, like, yeah, you know, it'd be great if this person showed up. It'd be great if this person showed up. All we really have done is just set where the bar is.
Right.
Mm. And somebody comes in and if somebody comes in and is over that bar, great.
That's who I'm going with. Yeah. And I think that you have to remember too, I would say like if a director asks you to audition and says that you would be great at this role, to remember that that's all that it means. It right. doesn't mean that you're being cast. And I don't even know what it would accomplish to tell other people differently other than to like put other people down and to like discourage folks, which I just think is like really gross.
Right.
And why would you do that?
Right.
And there's a difference, right? There's a difference between being offered a role ahead of time, because I know that that sometimes does happen. And even like a couple of schools that I've talked to have like been like, well, we're doing this show and I've already offered the lead to a person, which I'm like, well, that's a choice mm-hmm. that I don't think I would make. But like right. they're upfront about it. So like be aware that most of the time when people have made an offer ahead of time, they're going to be upfront about it. And if you hear from a student, I would not trust anything that anybody tells you right. in that regard.
Yeah.
Right.
For sure.
Yeah. And is there anything else like with casting that's...
It is so much more difficult. The amount of hours of agonizing that happen mm-hmm. is real.
Yeah.
Lindsay has sat in with me on casting before. And I mean, you'll find us at 3 o'clock in the morning still trying to piece together... and so much of casting is completely out of your control.
Yep.
It has to do with what story we're telling. It has to do with oftentimes there's you're trying to put together a family, right? So you need to put together people that you could believe are in a loving relationship, right? It right. has to do sometimes with chemistry. It can come down to height. It can come down to, you know, you've done... I don't know. There's so many variables.
Right.
And the best thing that can happen is also the worst thing that can happen, which is that we hope that we have 10 people for every role. And then what happens oftentimes is you do have an embarrassment of riches. And oftentimes I could cast a show 5 different ways.
Yeah.
Right.
But and,
you know, from to that point, but knowing that each person that you put in that role could change the entire dynamic of the show.
Mm-hmm.
So my example is I directed Oliver about 10 years ago. And we had 2 talented kids. One was probably slightly more talented than the other. But the one that was slightly more talented was 10 years old and very small. So if I cast him, the audience is rooting for him now, but for a completely different reason.
Yeah.
And it changes the entire dynamic of the show. Versus if I go with a kid who's probably slightly less talented, in terms of, I'm talking vocally, but is a little bit taller mm-hmm. and is 12 and is like a, he's a skinnier 12, but a, you know, doesn't look like he's,
right.
you know, can, I don't know what the word is that I'm looking for, but.
Well, because it changes that dynamic yeah. when Bill Sykes is being so terrible, you right. know, if, yeah. if the audience is actually concerned about the safety of somebody yeah. on stage right. Because of that discrepancy, then that doesn't serve the story
right.
anymore.
Right. I want them to root for him because he's somebody who's a survivor and you can already tell that he's a survivor
mm-hmm.
versus this little kid who is now getting thrown through the ringer and you're just praying that he makes it out of it alive.
Right. Yeah.
So that whole dynamic that you're talking about, yeah, I had two great kids and honestly, it took me 3 days to come to that yeah. decision.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't sleep. I wasn't eating very well.
Oh yeah.
I'll be honest. I was constipated. it was pretty, you're making it, and then it affects everything else down the line too. Because yeah. then it's like you got your Dodger, who's got to kind of take this kid under his wing, and if it's too big,
There's just so much intangible. It feels like that comes along with casting, and again, all you are responsible for is what you bring to the room.
Yeah,
and that's the only thing you have control about. In the process.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, it becomes this ethereal thing and as a director, I have to keep so many different things in mind, and it's not personal. It can feel personal because it is personal, right? You've right. just put yourself, what other activity do we do where you come in and you're like, hi, this is my body and my voice and you're now judging all of it. Very uncomfortable. So of right. course it feels personal,
right?
But it isn't.
Mm-hmm. And I think too, like I've heard kids say like that people cast to like be like malicious or like, well, they're just punishing me. I've never, ever done that.
No.
Like, and I don't think people do that. And if you can verify
right.
somehow that has happened, you should never work with that director again.
Right.
Because there are toxic directors that are out there.
Absolutely.
And you shouldn't work with those people. But like also make sure that you're not saying that they're toxic because you are upset with the choice that was made.
Right.
Verify right. that they are actually toxic before you decide to write that off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's easy to just, you know, I get it. It's easier on your heart to be like, well, they're just a jerk and they just don't like me and they just don't even know what they're doing. It's easier, right?
Right. So much easier.
Oh, yeah. No,
but you're right. Like I never sort of go, you know who I just really want to punish today.
Stick it to this kid, not cast them, and they're freaking awesome.
Now, having said that, what I said before is true. If you come in mm-hmm. and you are toxic to the process and you're rude to people, then I'm going to keep you out of that cast, mm-hmm. right? And that's not a personal thing other than I'm trying to put together a cohesive group that isn't going to make me want to pull my hair out
right.
because of all of the fighting that's happening.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because I said this thing before about if we worked with you before and you were terrible to work with, then is it, but yeah, then we kind of are punishing them, aren't we? Well, not punishing them, but.
I don't think so. I think there's a difference between like being like.
We're just not rewarding the behavior. Yeah, not rewarding the behavior.
Yeah.
I guess that's a better way to say it.
Because I have a policy always, but I had it especially during introspect that I would prefer that if you're going to fail and make a stupid choice as a human, like interpersonally or actually in any way, I would rather you do that with me because I always give you two chances.
Yeah.
Right. If you're going to fail hard and fail with me because it's not going to be something that I affect forever. Like I had kids like quit introspect, like horribly, like be the worst, like so mean. And then they come back the following year and we have a conversation and I'm willing to give you another chance. Like then they've like, those kids like went on to be directors and stuff. Or like I've had to kick kids out. I had to kick kids out and they could come back and re-audition the following year. Like I don't think it's punishing him if they have a track record of being toxic. And
right.
I think that you also need to know that as a human, like, am I being a toxic jerk? And am I being a diva? And why should people work with me then?
Right. I've absolutely not cast somebody before because they were incredibly rude and difficult mm-hmm. to work with in the audition, and then cast them the next year.
There you go. Because, that's not punishing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Stop being vindictive. It's
and,
also
and I've, to, and yeah. I've cast them the next year because they have shown that they that the growth that I needed to see in order that they came into the room
right.
and that they weren't difficult to work with and that they were being kind to everyone around them.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. That's important. What do you think about kids coming up and asking you for feedback on their audition?
I love it.
Yeah.
As long as I got time for it.
Yeah.
Like I'd rather them if it happens to me a lot where I'll get messages like on Facebook or things from either parents or the kid themselves asking because they weren't cast in the show, right. what is it that I could work on?
Yeah.
And sometimes it's, well, there's this, and this yeah. that you can work on. Or sometimes it's, I had, you know, 37 girls audition yeah. for the same role and
yeah.
I couldn't cast them all.
Right. And I've had the conversation with students before where I say, you did absolutely everything right.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't work out in your favor this time because the chemistry between these two people was what I needed. Or, you know, it's again, that those intangibles. And
yeah.
know that sometimes you can do everything right and it still doesn't work out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's maybe sometimes the hardest conversation I have because,
yeah.
you know, I think I...
Because you can't give them that good answer.
Yeah, I can't give them that good answer of
right.
like, you need to work
you
on your
perfect.
Vocal technique, you know?
It, right.
Oftentimes
Sorry.
It's like, you could have been great in this role. You're right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is not very good. But I'm with you guys. Like, I'm happy to talk about
yeah.
your audition and give you feedback. It might not be the answer you want to hear.
Right. Be prepared for, you know, if you're going to
yeah.
ask, be prepared for the answer.
Mm-hmm.
And that it may be that you need to work on a skill. And it may
yeah.
be that you, or that it may be that we saw that you weren't prepared.
Mm-hmm.
And be ready for that. You know, hopefully the person that you're asking is going to be constructive in what they say to you.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's yeah.
hard.
Ugh, it's tough.
And it's hard when a 7-year-old is asking you the question.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
Like,
and I think it is important what you suggested, like make sure that it is an appropriate time to ask that,
yeah.
right? Like,
and you're asking it appropriately. Don't be like, well, and like accusatory and
right.
like a jerk. Like, that's insane. Don't do that.
Right. I've had parents do that. When,
yeah.
and, so I guess one of the things that this is for the parents.
Yeah.
Like, know that your behavior has just as much to do.
Yep.
Yeah.
With, you know, our decisions going forward.
Yeah.
If you are a helicopter parent who is constantly butting in, you're ultimately hurting your kid's chances.
Right.
Going forward.
Yeah.
I hate to say that
mm-hmm.
because I want the kids, but if the parents are part of the package deal, then
yeah.
we have to think.
And there's a difference between
right.
an engaged parent,
right.
love engaged parents who are,
yeah.
you know, like helpful in supporting the process. But if you're constantly coming in, well, I think my child should have gotten this because they're the perfect person for that.
Right.
Right. Or after every rehearsal saying, you need to feature my daughter more in this role because.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, she's.
No. Terrible.
Have you ever had to have the conversation of, I'm sorry, but your child just isn't as good as you think she is?
I try to have it in terms of the what is reachable, right? Like,
right.
we
mm-hmm.
need to work on technique or need
yeah.
to get in with a vocal teacher or
right.
we need to, I would consider taking classes again. I don't know that I've ever said your darling is not as good as you think they are, but I've definitely given them the, they need to do more work.
Right. But you meant it.
But but in my heart, what I was thinking
yes.
was,
no,
they ain't so special.
Right.
Yeah. And I think, yeah, that's tough. I've had to have that a couple of times. I also had, like, as a coach, I won't take students that I feel like I can't help because I feel very guilty taking money.
Right.
So I've had to have that a couple of times and be like, hey, like, I just don't know. Like, maybe the commitment isn't
yeah.
there, or I think that there's other options to explore. But yeah, that's always
yeah.
the worst.
I haven't had to have that one yet.
Oh, well, that's good. I mean, I haven't had it as like a teacher. It's
yeah.
more like in my private coaching, like one-on-one thing.
Okay.
Ooh, it sucks.
Yeah. Agreed.
Okay, so we are almost at time already, which is like wild because it like went so fast. Like, yeah, we're like at 54 minutes. It's psychotic that we went this fast. And awesome. So one, like, so if you could give one last thing that you like wish that kids under or young artists like could know from your point of view, what would it be?
I think part of it is that there's always the next time.
Mm.
And that one rejection is not a forever.
Mm-hmm.
And that sometimes those things happen for a reason. And maybe the next time you come in, you will have learned from what happened before, but that there's always that opportunity to start over. And if you screw up an audition, that doesn't mean that you can't ever go in front of that director again. It doesn't mean that, you know, we are all human. And I have had to start over in auditions before. I've started to sing a song and gotten so off that I've had to say, I'm so sorry. Are you all right if I start that again? And most often, you know, and I've been asked that as a director too. And the answer is always yes, at least for me as a director.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, life happens.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I think for me, and it's going beyond the audition process and going into the rehearsal process. So I apologize if I'm off topic.
How dare you?
Sorry. It's that you need to trust that I'm not going to put you on stage doing something that doesn't look good.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Yes. Oh, my gosh.
A million times, yes.
And you need to, you know, sometimes step out of your comfort zone,
mm-hmm.
and take risks and feel vulnerable, and trust that me or the rest of the production staff were not out there to make you look foolish.
Mm-hmm.
That's the last thing we want, is our show to look dumb.
Right. Yeah.
So trust that if it doesn't work, we're not going to have you do it.
Yep.
But try it.
Try it. Yeah.
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 I always tell my students, I would much rather pull you back from a big, bold choice. I always say, wrong and strong, proud and loud.
Yeah.
That I would rather you make a big choice, a big decision, take that risk,
mm-hmm.
and have me be able to craft it and maybe dial it down or make it more specific, than for me to have to get a cattle prod to get you to make any choice whatsoever.
Right. Yeah.
Don't let fear stand in the way of... You know, right. We've got your back.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's one of those things that I wish I figured out,
mm-hmm.
earlier as an actor.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, for sure.
Because some of my best work came after I started getting out of my own head and
mm-hmm.
just started taking risks and feeling foolish.
Right.
Yeah.
I felt foolish doing it, but mm-hmm. it ended up being great.
Yeah.
So. That's good. Yeah. I think the thing I would say is that... I rarely actually like get mad at students. It sounds kind of bad, but like I don't have the energy usually after rehearsal to go home and like journal about how much I hate you.
In your burn book?
In my burn book. Yeah, exactly. That's not at all it. Like, I know I can be like tough in rehearsal, and I'm not like the most like warm personality. And I know this. I know. and that's okay. But like, I don't go home and like have like opinions about you as a human outside of the rehearsal room and like be negative about you. Not to say I don't care, because I do care a lot about my students, like regardless of how often I work with them. But I think like if I was doing this like for like my own ego or like, and I would have those thoughts, like I would be doing something completely different.
Yeah.
You know, like this is a lot of energy. This is more work in a lot of ways than doing other endeavors within the arts. Like choosing to work with young people is like a really, like, it's emotionally taxing for us just as it is for you. And so I don't think that we're going home and like gossiping about you with each other or whatever. And I think that's the biggest
thing. We usually have a bigger vision that we're worried about to sit there and dwell on the individual.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that'd be my thing. Because, like, I have kids all the time. I'm like, do you hate me? No, I don't have time to hate you. That sounds, like, really, really jerkish of me. But it's not. It's just like, dude, no, like,
we're all in this together. And if I'm going to hate somebody, I'm probably going to hate somebody who actually like affects my life negatively than like somebody who like talks too much at rehearsal or something.
Right. You know? Have you gotten the whole "we never see you smile" thing?
Oh, all the time.
Yeah. I get that a lot too.
Yeah.
So I'm like, well, just look at it as a treat then. Yeah. I actually do smile.
Right. Exactly. I forget what the introspect kids used to say, but they would like preface everybody. Oh, it was like Lindsay's thinking face looks like she wants to like punch you in the face and that she's the most angry. If she's actually angry, she will come down stage very calmly and just like say something that sounds really calm, but it's actually like really sarcastic and mean. I don't do this anymore because I'm a nice director now. But yeah, like, no. People always are like, why aren't you more happy? And I'm like, I am. I just like, I have to think really hard.
Yeah.
Focusing is really hard for me as I'm sitting here like doing 400 things as we're recording this podcast. It's very obvious. So yeah, but this was awesome. You guys are amazing. This is such a fun episode. So
I love Wisconsin.
Yeah, Wisconsin. Yeah, you do. Come and visit Wisconsin. We are the tourist people that will get you to come here. I don't know. I'm going to stop talking now. Because
don't come in winter.
Don't come in winter. Yeah. But thank you both for joining. And, you know, if you're a young person and you ever have questions about, you know, theater, or if we can ever be of help to you, please, like, reach out. You can always reach out to me on Instagram. And we can connect you with some folks that are willing to like have a conversation if that's possible to help you kind of get on the right page or whatever. We're happy to help you with that. So thanks, Kay and Justin. And thank you guys for tuning in. We'll be back next week with another episode. Okay, bye. Bye. Thanks for tuning into this week's episode. If you enjoyed it, I would love if you would leave us a review or rate us on iTunes or Stitcher, or share us with your friends on social media so that we are able to help spread the word around Flipping the Script and inspire people to make art that matters across the world. As a thank you for taking the time to review us and share us, each month I'm going to be giving away a theater swag gift basket. All that you need to do in order to win is just share us and review us, and every month I'm going to select a review or a share at random, read it on the air, and if it's yours, you will be the lucky winner of this awesome theater swag bag, which is going to have so much stuff in it that's like essential for the theater nerd, no matter if you're a teacher or student or just an enthusiast. If you want to find out more about Reef Theater and our programs, our online classes, and our community for educators, just go to www.reeftheaterco.com. Theater is spelled with an R-E. Or you can follow us on Facebook at Reef Theater. If you want to know about the work that I'm up to and find out more about Reef Theater, you can follow me on Instagram. I'm there all the time giving out lots of tips and ideas and just sharing about how awesome theater education is. You can follow me at @Lindsay_CuiavaBar. If you have any questions about today's episode or thoughts you'd like to share with us, or maybe you have some topics you'd like to see us cover in the future, I would totally love to hear from you. You can send me an email anytime at lindsay@retheaterco.com. Just make sure you spell Lindsay, A-Y, and I look forward to hearing from you. As always, thanks for listening, and keep on making art that matters.